Okay, so hopefully everyone is still awake and not sleeping from the cold yet. It's freezing. So first off, I want to say thank you to everyone involved in my research and my efforts here, and thank you for the session to be put on. So my research kind of feeds directly off Ruth's, looking at how important is phosphorus, and so is nitrogen cycling and bioavailability limited by phosphorus in the northern New England forest soils? So again, we're focusing here in the northeast. And so we got a lot of this introduction already today and on Monday, but get us all thinking on the same page, a brief introduction to nitrogen phosphorus cycling. So on a global scale, we have these increasing nitrogen deposition rates, as Ruth showed in the last presentation, and this is affecting nitrogen cycling globally. But then to kind of scale that down to what we're seeing here in the Northeast, we actually have seen deposition of nitrogen declining in the past few decades. We're still above background levels, but as a result of policy changes such as the Clean Air Act and the reauthorization of that, we've actually seen nitrogen deposition decline in our areas. However, because of this history of nitrogen deposition, we see accelerated nitrogen cycling as a result. And this accelerated nitrogen cycling leads into things like soil acidification, and this possible P limitation, which now we've heard a lot about phosphorus in the previous presentations, so I don't want to say too much, but phosphorus is one of those nutrients where there's not a lot of external inputs, so what's in the soil, it relies very heavily on what's already in the soil and internal cycling between the plants, the microbes, and the geochemical sources there. So my study site was at the lovely Bear Brook Watershed in Maine, a little smaller than Hubbard Brook, in the eastern part of Maine. It's a paired watershed study, and we have two watersheds, East Bear, which is our biological, biogeochemical reference watershed, and West Bear is our treated watershed. And so by treated, I mean it's received bimonthly additions of ammonium sulfate for 25 years now, since 1989. We've added about 25 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen every year and 28 kilograms of sulfur every year. And recent studies or studies on the watershed in these past 25 years have shown that because of this nitrogen addition, we have accelerated in mineralization rates in West Bear versus East Bear. So our research objectives are kind of like Ruth's, to see how important is phosphorus? Is phosphorus availability limiting nitrogen cycling in our watershed? And we looked at this in three different ways. Using first watershed comparison, so comparing our reference watershed to our treated watershed, which is a way to look at different levels of nitrogen and how that would affect the phosphorus available, or how that would impact things. And then secondly, we looked at forest type contrast, and I'm a little weary to lump things into hardwood and softwood now that I've listened to a bunch of talks saying that that's terrible. But alas, we've already done that, so don't criticize me. So we separated into hardwood and softwood soils and looking at how the difference in cycling between those soils would affect phosphorus, or how phosphorus availability would affect those rates. And then finally, we looked at using phosphorus manipulation. So we wanted to kind of see, is there a response surface of in mineralization to higher rates of phosphorus addition? And so we added different levels of phosphorus and looked at in mineralization rates. And so our field experiment here, to kind of scale it down a little bit, so we have our two watersheds, like I mentioned, and we split those off into two compartments. So we have four compartments total. You have your West Bear softwood, West Bear hardwood, which again is our treated watershed, East Bear softwood, and East Bear hardwood. And within each compartment, we have five study plots. And my study plots were 10 meter by 15 meter, and they contained a no-P reference subplot, and then a plus P subplot where we added phosphorus, and then all the other subplots are someone else's work and they're not important. Oh. We can present in the dark. So my field experiment, we added, like I said, we added phosphorus at 100 kilograms per hectare of phosphorus in the form of sodium phosphate. We used backpack sprayers, so as you can see here, see if I can get this laser pointed to work. In the bottom image, we like pre-mixed these shots of phosphorus and then mix them into backpack sprayers in the field and applied them. Ooh, I'm pointing at myself. There we go. applied them by walking back and forth across our plot, adding phosphorus. And so it gave really thorough and good application. And then we sampled soils at six progressively longer dates over time. So once, like the day after, and then our last date was day 406, so over a year afterwards. And then, in addition to our field experiment, we have two laboratory incubations. The first one, we use the P-amended soil, so we use the soil from my plus P subplots in the field, our plus P and our no P, and then we incubated it to look at immunization rates. And you can see here we put them in, I didn't like me to call them this, but the red solo cups. I sang the song a lot while doing this. And then our second incubation, we wanted to look at different levels of phosphorus addition, so we took soil from outside of our plot, so soil that had not had any field addition of phosphorus, and we added five different levels of phosphorus addition, again in the same form of sodium phosphate, 0, 25, 50, 100, and 200 kilograms per hectare of phosphorus in these little cups. And we really wanted to capture, you know, the low end of the spectrum and then what we predicted would be the high, kind of like absurd amount of phosphorus levels. And then we have 100 kilograms, which was our field treatment level. And so all soil samples were extracted for ammonium. We used two molar KCl extracts on the autoanalyzer. And then, as I mentioned, our laboratory incubations were looking at potential net and mineralization rates. So now the fun part, the results. So first, I'll set up this graph a little bit for you. I know there's a lot going on. So on the bottom, we have these chase dates. So we're getting, this is right after I applied the phosphorus, and then this is a year out. And then I have it split up into hardwoods and softwoods. So hardwoods on the top, softwoods on the bottom. And then it's further split up by watershed, East Bear and West Bear. West Bear being the closed circles, and remember that West Bear is our treated watershed. And then on our x-axis or y-axis, we have a delta ammonium. And so this is expressed as the difference in ammonium between our plus P subplots and our no P subplots. So that really means that positive values, so above that dotted line, means that there is more ammonium in our plus P subplots, and that negative numbers indicate that there is less P in our plus P subplots. And there's a variety of reasons which we think we see this. Three possible mechanisms driving this decrease in ammonium in our plus P subplots. The first of which being microbial mobilization of the ammonium. The second which being possible plant uptake of this ammonium. And the third being some kind of ammonification suppression as a result of the salt pulse that came with our treatment. We tend to favor the microbial mobilization idea, and so that's how I'm going to explain this, and it'll become a little bit more apparent as I get to my laboratory incubations why we chose that one. And so our negative numbers then indicate that there's a level of ammonium immobilization going on in our plus P plots. And so to point out, there's the greatest difference, the greatest decline, or the greatest immobilization occurs in our West Bear hardwood sites. So that's in this top area, these black dots. And so you see immobilization pretty much immediately after we add our phosphorus, and it's greatest there. You see kind of the same trend going on in East Bear in the hardwoods, but it takes a little longer to see this immobilization occurring. And then the same thing happens in softwoods, but again, it takes a little bit longer, and it's not not to the extent. It's a little bit more muted of a response than what we see in our hardwood stands. And so finally, and then by the time we get a year out, day 406, there's no remnants of this response. We're back. The two subplots are pretty equal. And so then we took our soil from the field and we incubated to look at immunization rates, and this is incubation one. And so again, I have it split up by compartments on the bottom, East Bear hardwood, East Bear softwood, and then West Bear hardwood and softwood. And remember, West Bear is our treated site. And so we see similar results. When we add phosphorus, net mineralization decreases. And because this is a lab incubation, there's no roots in it, we can kind of try to cut off a little bit of what might have been the plant root uptake. Not that that wasn't going on in the field, but since we're seeing a lot of the similar responses, we can attribute this again to the microbial immobilization of this ammonium, or the relative microbial immobilization, since we're not sure exactly what's going on in the middle process. And so, again, as we added phosphorus, we saw decreases in rosation. And again, Westbar hardwood showed the most significant, it had the highest net mineralization rates to begin with, and then when we added phosphorus, it decreased the most. And as I mentioned before, we already know that Westbar hardwoods, or Westbar itself, has higher in mineralization rates, so the high number for the NOPI wasn't too surprising, but then watching the decline. And then finally, incubation two. So remember, incubation two, we took soil that wasn't amended at all from the field, and we added five different levels of phosphorus. And so you can see on the x-axis are different levels of phosphorus addition and how they correlate with the extractable phosphorus that we saw. And it's a really strong correlation, and so we ended up going with extractable phosphorus, as we'll see in the next slide, as a way to explain our in-mineralization rates. So here's another intimidating graph. So on the x-axis, like I said, are extractable phosphorus levels. On the y, we have our potential net in-mineralization rates, and then we have it split up by hardwoods and softwoods. So all you really need to know is the dark points are hardwood sands, and the circles are the softwoods. And so in this experiment, watershed was not found to be significant. The forest type was the real driving factor here, and you can see why. So we analyzed all this data using the Michaelis-Menten function, which is used to explain enzyme kinetics. And so the Vmax values that you see here really explain the highest level of potential net in-mineralization achieved by each forest type. And with hardwoods being 18 and softwoods being 10, we have it's almost double of what we see. So hardwoods having higher in-mineralization rates. And then the Km value indicating kind of how quickly these systems react to the phosphorus. And there's a tenfold difference between the two, meaning hardwoods really reacted quickly when you added phosphorus, whereas softwoods still weren't. They still never really reached this top leveling off area. And so our conclusions, if we go back to our research objectives, is there evidence to suggest that phosphorus is influencing encycling? And I think yes. The data does show that there's some kind of influence there. Is forest type the most significant? Forest type was the most significant along all of our experiments, and so I think forest type, we can confidently say the forest type influences were greater than our end treatments. And then finally, our results suggest some kind of evolution of in response to P over time. So incubation two really looked at the short-term response of it, whereas our field experiment, our laboratory incubation number one, we're looking at more long-term responses, and we think that these are caused by microbial responses, and there's some preliminary data out that suggests that there are differences in community composition changes that happen over time as we add our phosphorus. There was no evidence of suppression of the microbial community biomass suppression that went on with our salt treatment. However, these data are preliminary. I know the graduate student is working on that, so as we get more, the story will undoubtedly unfold a little bit more. So that's it. No, it's organic horizon.
And how thick a forest floor did you have in the sense, looking back to organic phosphorus versus inorganic, which would be really a whole different system? Did you have any feeling how this would go into the organic mineral layer and so on, or this is something strictly in the mineral?
Well, so I looked mostly at just the organic horizons. That's what we own. Are you asking about what's happening in the mineral soil? I'm confused, I'm sorry.
Laboratory was mineral, correct?
No, no, we only use organic horizons.
But that was your organic layer, strictly.
Okay. We looked at the O.
One more question.
When you measured your ammonium level going down, did you also measure nitrate? What was happening to nitrate?
Yeah, so we actually, I didn't include it on this presentation, but we did measure nitrate at the same time, and the story, there wasn't too much going on there, and so that's why we focused solely on the effect of ammonium.
Okay.